Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Poe, and welcome back to episode 40 of the Game Biz Podcast. So I have three news items for you guys today, and then we will go through the topic of the week, discussing on PlayStation strategy with going live service. Now, before I start, I'll just say that all the reporting I'm about to talk is sourced from linked attached in the show notes. All the opinions and speculations I have are my own, and I do not have any insider information whatsoever when I'm talking about this. So let's start off with the first news item. Amazon Game Studios boss has stepped down, and this is taken from VGC's Andy Robinson, source from Bloomberg. The statement issued is that the boss of Amazon Game Studios, Mike Frazzini, has stepped down from the development division he helped create. Quote, Mike was there at the beginning of Amazon Games, and his leadership and perseverance helped build the games business from the ground up. The company said in a statement, our recent successes with New World and Lost Ark are the result of the long-term customer-focused vision for games he helped establish. We are very grateful for all his contributions and wish Mike the very best. End quote. During Frazzini's tenure, Amazon Games business struggled to create a breakout hit. Despite reportedly investing hundreds of millions into development of the company's team-based shooter, Crucible, officially ceased in October 2020, just 5 months after the game's launch, following its struggle to attract a significant player base. More recently, Amazon canceled a Lord of the Rings MMO, reportedly because of a dispute with Tencent, the parent company of the title's co-developer Athlon Games. The company finally found success with MMO New World late last year, with the title attracting Steam's fifth highest ever concurrent player figure at the time of launch. According to Bloomberg, some staff had criticized Mike Frazzini due to his lack of experience running a game studio. The executive had transferred from Amazon's book division. One former Amazon game studio manager reportedly said that Frazzini's leadership suffered because he had not had prior experience in gaming. Amazon is a company that often assumes that if you can succeed in one category, you can succeed in another, they said. So if I remember correctly myself, I've covered something like this previously, which was also from Bloomberg. It was an article, something like Amazon is kind of like Google in a sense, you know, big money, has big ambitions, but, you know, always start on the wrong foot with the direction. For example, hiring the wrong leaders, staff, and giving up too soon when they see it's not working. Now, it is perhaps a good thing that Frazzini got this good opportunity to step down while being able to say that, you know, the games division right now is in a pretty good place. New World has honestly, I think, dropped off in terms of players quite hard since its first initial launch. But Lost Ark is currently still very hot and doing very well. Now, keep in mind that this title is actually the only one that's developed and published by Amazon Games. Sorry, the New World is the only one that's developed and published by Amazon Games themselves, while Lost Ark is developed by the Korean developer Smilegate RPG, while only being published by Amazon Games. Either way, it is still perceived to the general audience, I think, that Amazon has gotten a lot of credit for that game success as well. And it being really popular. But, you know, let's hope that they can keep up this momentum and succeed in their future releases as much as they have been doing so far. All right, now towards the second news item, Xbox's The Initiative Studio has seen a fast and furious wave of senior departures in the past 12 months, VGC has learned. Again, this is reported by Andy Robinson. So, as much as half the core development team known to be working on the upcoming Perfect Dark reboot quit the company during the last year, or around 36 people, and this was an analysis of employee LinkedIn profiles has revealed. That includes most of the initiative's senior design team, including game director Dan Neuberger, design director Drew Murray, lead level designer Chris O'Neill, principal world builder Jolon Myers and two senior assistant designers, a group of three former God of War designers, and more. And the turnover of top talent doesn't end in the design teams. Perfect Dark's two most senior writers also recently quit, analysis shows, along with the project's technical director, tech art director, lead gameplay engineer, and lead animator, QA lead, and more, according to LinkedIn. The initiative is not less than 50 people. When duplicated former employees and erroneous listings are removed, and currently has just three roles advertised on its website. Analysis suggested that it hired around 12 people in the past 12 months. So the timing of departures coincide with the September 2021 announcement that Crystal Dynamics had been signed to co-develop Perfect Dark. This, combined with the few job roles currently advertised at the initiative, suggests that the Tomb Raider developers is likely taking a much stronger lead than first thought on the project. Interviews with multiple former senior developers cited a lack of creative autonomy and the slow development process as the reason for their departures, and described the wave of exits as fast and furious, with project momentum said to be heavily affected. The initiative's management told VGC it's confident in the team it has in place and new talent joining, and pointed to industry-wide staffing challenges during COVID-19 pandemic. In the games industry, competition for experienced talent is at an all-time high following a pandemic-fueled gaming boom, and unhappy initiative staff would likely have had plenty of alternative employment opportunities at the large number of neighboring AAA studios in California. Across the industry, many studios are currently facing a talent crisis, with the sheer level of expansion and investment in the sector making it challenging for even the biggest studios to retain and attract senior staff. The former initiative developers VGC spoke to attributed the wave of departures to frustration among senior talent over the direction of the project set down by Gallagher and game director Daniel Neuberger, who himself left the company last month. According to the former employees, many senior team members were frustrated by this perceived lack of autonomy and didn't feel heard on key issues such as development priorities, project planning, and team staffing. Gallagher and Neuberger, who were previously studio head and game director at Crystal Dynamics, wanted to make games the way they always had, with top-down direction, the sources said, while many initiative employees were expecting a more bottom-up approach. As a result, it claimed that development had progressed, quote-unquote, painfully slowly, and a solid company culture never formed. All former employees VGC spoke to said they were surprised at how lenient Microsoft had been over the lack of progress. One person said, end quote, making games is hard enough, let alone when you feel like you can't get through to people making the decisions that affect everyone, end quote. The culture issue was partly behind the decision to bring on board Crystal Dynamics, it's claimed, with Gallagher and Neuberger allegedly hoping that production would move more smoothly with the direction of a second team familiar with their methods. Crystal Dynamics' introduction is also likely to plug the gaps left by the initiative's staff turnover, VGC was told. VGC sources agreed that they would be surprised if Crystal Dynamics' introduction, combined with a significant departure of the core staff, hadn't triggered an effective soft reboot of Perfect Dark, and that it was likely still years away from release. It's understandable that Xbox leadership team are prepared to be patient with their new first-party teams, which includes those currently working on Playground's Fable and Rare's Everwild, as they prioritize assembling groups capable of regularly producing the kind of critically acclaimed prestige projects that come from PlayStation Studios like Naughty Dog and Insomniac. So here's my thoughts. So of course, I think this wave of departures is concerning to anyone who just takes a glance and sees how things are going over there. Hence, you know, this article coming out makes sense. Face value really doesn't look that good. So with many departures, again, like the article has said, it really just means longer development time will be required. It's not just about the talent swapping, but it's also about, you know, getting people working together, getting the right people working together, having that company culture and the time required to make that work itself towards, like, you know, 100% efficiency, or, you know, as close as possible to that. For Microsoft, I don't think it means too much just yet. For them, like, I don't think it means you need to worry too much just yet, at least for now. Like, unlike when this team was initially announced, and, you know, them obviously making a huge deal with how, oh, it's going to be like a quadruple A studio and all that stuff. Xbox is in a much, much different position now with Game Pass, like, really lifting off and having acquired so many well-established and recognizable studios that they're, you know, able to subsidize any of that responsibilities that the initiative team was initially shouldering, I think. These and other Xbox studios can now help release games until whenever Perfect Dark Remake or Reboot is ready, I would say. So, yeah. All right. So, finally, here is the last and final third news item. Ampere Analysis states that console market grew to a record of $60 billion in 2021. Now, this is from James Batchelor at GameCentury.biz. A study by Ampere Analysis has estimated that studying on console games, hardware, and services reached $60 billion last year, which the firm describes as a record high. In the company's report, head of games research Piers Harding Rolls wrote that this growth was quote-unquote held back by the lack of availability for PS5s and Xbox Series X and S. Although their higher price when compared to previous gen models did help increasing spending. Spending on the actual games content, encompassing full titles, expansion packs, in-game items, and battle passes, held steady when compared to 2020, declining just by 1%. This is all the more impressive given how much lockdown measures boosting spending 2 years ago while everyone was compelled to stay at home. Meanwhile, game services such as Xbox Game Pass are increasing their share of total console gaming. Combined revenues from Xbox Live Gold, Xbox Game Pass, Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, PlayStation Plus, PlayStation Now, and Nintendo Switch Online are estimated to account for 19% of all spending on games content. This is up from the 15% share from services achieved in 2020, and Ampere expects this to increase to 21% in 2022. Conversely, packaged game spending is in a continued decline, with this segment's share of total software spending dropping below 30% for the first time. Box game sales are sustained somewhat by the success of the Nintendo Switch, but Ampere predicts that the market share of packaged game sales compared to digital will continue to drop in 2022, expecting to slip to 26% of total spending. Sony remains to be the market leader when it comes to driving spend, accounting for 46% of all revenues generated in the console market. Meanwhile, Nintendo's share dropped to 29%, which is 2% less than in 2020, while Microsoft rose 1% to 25%. Harding Rolls noted that the Sony's dominance, quote, highlights the strength of its digital business, end quote, when compared to Nintendo, which, quote, still lags behind, end quote, both Sony and Microsoft when it comes to digital full game sales, in-game monetization, and services. Ampere predicts that the console market will continue to grow in 2022, with spending forecast to reach more than $61 billion by the end of the year. Now, for this report, I kind of really don't have much to add, but I just thought it would be really interesting. Like, this is just really interesting information that we can all keep in mind and think about how large just the gaming industry has grown from even just 5 years ago, and just to be expected that it's going to keep growing, and kind of also why at this stage in time, as you can see, the growth has started to be less and less variant or, you know, gapped up sort of thing. So I do think it makes sense kind of why we see a lot of consolidation, all that jazz happening around this time. All right, and that's it for the games news this week. We shall take a very, very quick break before getting into the topic of the week. All right, let's talk about Sony and look at what seems to be their live service strategy. So we've already known that they are the kings at making single-player experiences, and that they have been planning to further delve into the live service business for some time now. With recent events, I think we have a bit more clarity of what that might just be looking like. So there's two directions I want to break down Sony's live service strategy. There's live service through subscription, and there's live service through games. Let's start with the subscription way. The reason I'm stating that subscriptions are part of the live service is because live service games on PlayStation require a PS Plus subscription for the most part. Now, yes, I know free-to-play multiplayer games don't need one, but all others do, really. There is another reason, but before I reveal that, let's take a look back a little bit at their calendar year 2021 earnings. So in terms of earnings breakdown, they've made $24.87 billion in revenue, up 8.9% year over year. If we include their mobile game division, which is under Sony Music and not PlayStation, then that would be an additional $1.09 billion, with the total amounting to $25.967 billion. A further breakdown shows that their network and subscription business holds 15% of their total revenue that year, or $3.67 billion. PlayStation now has 48 million PS Plus subscribers and 111 million monthly active users across its online network. That's around 43% of accounts that pay a monthly fee. So, the reason why subscription service is a part of the live service strategy is because PS Plus, and to an extent PS Now, offers games, gaming, or game streaming as another incentive to join the service. So far, this part of the strategy has been the same for many years ago, and really the reason why PlayStation is starting to put a lot of emphasis, attention, and investment into the live service is because Microsoft showed that the live service and subscription and offering games, you know, game streaming, all that cloud stuff can make a lot of money. It was previously reported about Sony's comparable version of Game Pass, codenamed Spartacus, could be a combination of Sony's two current subscription services, PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Now. The service is expected to have three different tiers, which will offer different games at different price points. One tier is expected to be very similar to the current PlayStation Plus subscription, while subsequent tiers would add PS4 and PS5 games, though the latter are expected to come, quote, in the future, as well as, quote, access to extended demos and the ability to stream games over the internet, end quote, according to Bloomberg. Previous reports also said that the highest tier could include a library of classic games from systems like PS2 and PSP. The most recent update to this is from Bloomberg's Jason Schreier, stating that Sony will announce the service, quote, as early as, end quote, next week, or I guess this week at the time when the podcast is being available. Now let's move on and talk about the other side of the coin in the subscription service business and live service strategy. Sony throughout these years sees an increased adoption of digital network, of the digital gaming sphere, as well as really sustained and healthy growth in their subscription service, which we've just talked about and how it's related to playing online, mostly live service games, and providing a vast gaming library to play or stream, which is being worked on. It's not available yet, but it's being worked on as far as the reports are given. The other equation that is yet to be said is, of course, the games themselves. Very important. Sony stated last year that 25% plus of its PlayStation Store spend in fiscal year 2020 was from free-to-play games such as Fortnite and Genshin Impact. So that's a lot of money left on the table, really, in terms of live service games. Now, it's pretty well known that for the most part, Sony is not known for their live service games. Their biggest or most well-known was probably Last of Us multiplayer. And that was still during the time of era where developers were just attaching some sort of multiplayer mode to every one of their single-player games to have that perception of additional value. Because why pay a game for $60 to just enjoy a well-told single-player story when you truly want to buy it for this crappy add-on multiplayer mode, right? That's sarcasm, by the way. So Xbox is by far more well-known for the multiplayer side of gaming, with, of course, the Halo franchise. Now, really, other than that, most live service games on the console are from third-party publishers and developers, where they can put out their multiplayer games on all platforms. Previously, PlayStation's strategy with live service since the PS4 era was to have some sort of a big public marketing relationship going on. And examples I can throw out there is of like advertising campaigns of Call of Duty games, Destiny, Fortnite, and GTA 5 online on all of, you know, the big PlayStation events that you see throughout the year. This is also includes like adding some stupid bonus for playing the online mode on, you know, PlayStation, and you get like, you know, extra loot or coins or some additional content like Spider-Man DLC for Marvel's Avengers, for example. But now we know that PlayStation is getting into Spartacus and thus being a little bit more like Game Pass. Now, if you're thinking it will be like Game Pass and getting those, and you're going to get those big AAA single player games on day one, then I'm sorry, but you're dreaming, because they are at a standard that Xbox is not at, and they don't need to do that because they're going to lose money that way, frankly. So let's get rid of that notion, I think. So the other big way to attract users is, I think, through live service games, which, like I just explained, they don't have just yet. And that's why at the start of this PS5 era, they have been pushing massively towards partnerships with studios to make them these live service games. We have so far counting Deviation Games, Firewalk Studio, and lastly, of course, Haven Studio. On PlayStation's own studio side, we have Last of Us 2 multiplayer, which is in works, we still know that. Guerrilla has also been spotted to have hiring roles related to online games, and London Studio is also working on a mysterious new PS5 online game. Very interestingly, this week on March 21st, Sony announced their purchase of Jade Raymond's Haven Studio, even before they have announced what the game that they were developing even looked like or what it is even about, besides the fact that it is a live service multiplayer game for the PS5 and PC. Now, it has been revealed that in a recent interview, we know that the game will have some sort of persistent and scalable evolving online environment. Now, this very short description to me, when I first hear it, sounds a lot like what Fortnite is doing with their quote-unquote metaverse world, you know, with how the changing map environments and so on. Also, the team wants to be pushing the PS5 console and will collab with Sony on it, apparently. The thing about this acquisition is that it's a turn of events, because in the past, when I had mentioned their strategy in mergers and acquisitions, is that they usually acquire only after working with the studios and, you know, have a good track record and good working relationship. And this, you know, to me surely doesn't seem like that on the outside, doesn't really pass a sniff test. But perhaps since Sony's investment in Haven Studios from last March, maybe that was enough to convince Sony that Jade Raymond and the team at Haven, which is currently over 60 employees, have what it takes to succeed in PlayStation's success terms, I guess. Price of the acquisition, of course, has not been disclosed. Then again, this might be Sony telling everyone that they are beyond serious, which really is displayed a little bit prior, I think. Wink, wink, I am referring to their acquisition announcement of Bungie for $3.6 billion, which, after the deal closes, Bungie will be still an independent subsidiary of SIE ran by the board of directors, consisting of current CEO and chairman Pete Parsons, and the rest of the company, rest of the studio's current management team. Sony has said Bungie will remain a multi-platform studio with the option to, quote, to self-publish and reach players wherever they choose to play, end quote. Quote, we've had a strong partnership with Bungie since the inception of Destiny franchise, and I couldn't be more thrilled to officially welcome the studio to the PlayStation family, said SIE President and CEO Jim Ryan, This is an important step in our strategy to expand the reach of PlayStation to a much wider audience. We understand how vital Bungie's community is to the studio and look forward to supporting them as they remain independent and continue to grow. Like Bungie, our community is core to PlayStation's DNA, and our shared passion for the gamer and building the best place to play will now evolve even further, end quote. So this is PlayStation's true cornerstone of their live service roadmap. By buying Bungie, the OG creators of Halo, by the way, they gain access to a slate of benefits on top of already successful and proven gaming franchise that is Destiny, and, you know, proven working relationship and track record with Sony with all those, advertising campaigns and so on. Benefits include, but not limited to, established expert talent in multiplayer developers, perhaps overlooked, but, you know, nowadays employment market is extremely competitive right now. And if you can't hire fast enough or hire people with enough experience, then, you know, simply just buy the developers that are experts that you're seeking. Bungie has well over 800 plus staff members with free-to-play and games-as-a-service experience. And as Christopher Dream from GameIndustry.biz puts it best, he says, quote, "The motivation behind Sony's acquisition of Bungie is to help boost their own abilities to make live service, multi-platform games. Equally, Sony unlocks the potential to Bungie to strengthen its technical capabilities and the prospect of taking its games to movie/TV as well," end quote. To further prove the point, Sony themselves in their recent investors call stated that they are planning more than 10 live service games before March 2026. Quote, "The strategic significance of this acquisition lies not only in obtaining the highly successful Destiny franchise as well as major new IP Bungie is currently developing, but also incorporating into the Sony group the expertise and technologies Bungie has developed in the live service space," says Sony CFO Hiroki Totoki. "Through close collaboration between Bungie and PlayStation Studios, we aim to launch more than 10 live service games by the fiscal year ending March 2026, end quote. Personal prediction is that these live service, 10 live service games will no doubt be the big advertising ticket for their Spartacus subscription service. It'll be like their poster child. Also, PlayStation will be making all their live service games for not only the PlayStation console, but it's going to be on other platforms like PC or mobile. Now, I will be surprised if it will be on other consoles like Nintendo or Xbox, but I won't rule out that possibility just yet. I'm interested to hear what the actual subscription tiers will be differentiated and their pricing strategy as well. But that's for a future episode. And with that said, I'll end it here today. Thank you all for listening. If you wish to follow me, you can find me at GameBizPod on Twitter. And, you know, if you want, listen to my other 39 episodes of the podcast if you haven't yet. Bye!